sanity. So Jennifer, great. Excited to hear what you have to say tonight.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I know I promised no more visual aids, but, you know, I had more poster board. And I kind of like the idea of when I was, you know, reading through and meditating on step two, of seeing the words. I'm a word person, and I thought, you know, I looked around and I didn't see in this room that the steps are on the wall anywhere. So I thought, well, maybe it's okay to, you know, to put the step up there so everybody knows what we're talking about tonight. And I want to start off by saying my sobriety date is May 4th, 1991. My home group is God Calling, 7 o'clock on Friday nights at Kingsley United Methodist Church. I have a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor. And I do sponsor ladies. That's a great blessing in my life. Hi, everybody on Zoom. Hi. So let's start where we left off last week. If you were here, if you weren't, you probably know that step one came before step two. And what we found out was that if when you honestly want to, you find that you cannot quit entirely. We're talking about alcohol now. Or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And we talked about what that is last week. You know, I had to learn after I got here. But if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And now that's, you know, that's kind of shocking if you're not a spiritually minded person. But we were powerless, we found out last week, over alcohol. Lives have become unmanageable. So we need a solution. I needed a solution. And it says here that lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. But where, and obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object, no matter what you think it's for, its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. Well, my problem is I'm powerless over alcohol. My life had become unmanageable. That's the problem. And the problem is that I have a disease that mentally tells me that it's perfectly all right for me to drink, and an allergy that will kill me because I can't stop once I start. And that's insanity. And that is the insanity that is being referred to in step two, where we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's the sanity we're talking about. The insanity that precedes the first drink. I can only be saved from that first drink by my God, by a power greater than me. Because left to my own devices, without a power greater than myself, I will drink. So God stands between me and the first one. It's just that way. But it's important for us to know that that's the insanity they're talking about here, because I was pretty insane in many other ways in my life. It's not like I was perfectly organized and healthy in all of my other affairs in my life. My relationships were good, you know, jobs were great, finances were rocking. That wasn't the case. I had unhealthy behaviors. I had unhealthy coping mechanisms. I had old ideas, and I used them, and I didn't examine them You know, I knew nothing about why I did the things I did. So when we come in here and we see that second step, restore us to sanity, I don't know about you, but the first thing I said was, whew, I'll be fine then. Well, if that were the case, we'd only have two steps. But it isn't. It is, however, vital, a vital step, step two, because if I continue to drink, I will die, and all those other healthy changes that can happen in my life, the building of a spiritual life, which I had always searched for, always wanted to live a spiritual life, never knew how to get there. Those weren't going to happen as long as I had a drink in my hand. So this had to happen. And I have to be honest with you, I really did not struggle with step two. And as I was meditating and preparing to come and talk with you tonight, I really had to look at why that is. Because I thought for a long time that I just didn't struggle with it because I had drunk myself to a place where alcohol just didn't work for me anymore. And so not drinking once I got here was not a big deal. Because I know people who really struggle to not pick up that first drink, and they struggle for a long time. That was not the situation with me. I came in and I thought, well, it's because, you know, I really, really knew that alcohol was not going to solve my problems, wasn't going to make me feel better, wasn't going to take away the pain and the fear anymore. Now, those things were true. But I don't think that's the reason that step two easily came to me. If you were here last week, you heard me talk about going to Al-Anon before I came here because, of course, it was your drinking that we needed to correct, and then I would be fine. But you remember I talked to you about my Al-Anon sponsor telling me every time I called her from the bar to pray. You know, and the truth of the matter is I did that. I didn't know what I was praying to. I was agnostic. And the chapter that completely talks about, you know, step two in its entirety is called We Agnostics. I was agnostic. I didn't disbelieve in God. I kind of believed there was a creative intelligence of some kind. All my life I really thought there was something out there. I just never availed myself of it, never connected to it, never thought about asking it to help me out of the terrible pain I was in. And so it didn't work for me because I didn't work for it. So I was agnostic, and I think many of us are, because nobody that I have met walks in here with a solid spiritual foundation in their lives that they are living on a day-to-day basis. They wouldn't need us, you know. That's what we do. That's what we develop when we get here. That is our goal, you know, is to have that spiritual awakening as a result of doing these steps. So I discovered when I was preparing for this something that in 30 years I really didn't realize, that prayer that I was doing with, you know, even though I was still drinking, was walking me to these doors. And another thing was going on too, and it talks about it here in We Agnostics, if I can find it. It talks about us having trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control our emotional natures, prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. This is all me. Had a feeling of uselessness, full of fear, was unhappy, and couldn't be of real help to other people. Well, that's just exactly how I was when I got here. But when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Now, you can call it whatever you want. I don't care. You know, it's a power greater than yourself. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Huh. Well, my dad, who was a drunk when I was a kid, that's why I went to Al-Anon, terrible childhood, had gotten sober when I was about 15 years old, and I saw the change. I saw that this AA thing really worked. So when I read that, when we saw the others solve their problem, well, that helped me to become open-minded to the fact that a spiritual solution could solve the problem. What's the problem? Powerless. Powerless over alcohol. Can't get anywhere, cannot move forward until I solve that problem. I have to put down the drink before I can move forward. And I had to be open-minded about these spiritual matters. And I know that a lot of people are uncomfortable talking about a higher power. You know, I sponsor a woman who's Buddhist. My husband sponsored an atheist. I've sponsored people who were very, very involved in the Christian community. And people who actually my sponsor is a spiritualist. It doesn't matter. All they say is we need a power greater than ourselves, and that we believe that that power, which is greater than ourselves, can solve this problem. We don't even have to believe to do step two. We don't have to actually be fully believing, because, you know, it takes some people had bad experiences with religion. Some people don't believe in religion at all. I had a problem with religion because there were, like, too many rules. You know, like, those commandments, the commandments. I thought, that's outrageous to be commanding things. And I had a woman tell me when I was young in sobriety, why don't you look at those Ten Commandments as like a barometer? To, like, you know, just, they're not, you know, measure where you're at against that. Not, you know, look at them that way. And I thought, oh, that's, I like that. Ooh, that's a little more gentle. I can maybe do that. I don't like being commanded, though. I mean, do you? So, you know, I finding a God of my understanding, a higher power that I was comfortable with, I had to be open-minded about it. I had searched for a long time. I knew that I wanted a higher power in my life. I just didn't know how to go about it. I was a philosophy minor in college. I knew all about Eastern religions, Eastern philosophies. They didn't help me at all, as long as I was had a glass of bourbon in my hand when I was studying for the exam. I got a B on that too, and I really was pissed off because I knew all about what is Zen, and I still didn't get an A on that test. But so anyway, we only need to be willing to believe. You know, because there's atheists out there. My husband sponsored one. Guy just sent him a text. He moved out of town, got married, got a great job. Just sent him a text the last time we were down Pittsburgh way to let him know that he's celebrating 13 years of continuous sobriety. Yeah, this kid was an atheist, but he was willing to believe that there might be a power greater than himself. So all I need to do is believe, or even be willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself, and that that power would be able to solve this problem. And this problem for me was powerless over alcohol. Life had become unmanageable. There's a lot in the big book that backs that up, and I would recommend anybody to read We Agnostics, because a beautiful chapter. It tells us that we found as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. That's really encouraging, because remember last week we had nothing going for us, you know? That last week on step one, we were hopeless. We had no solution. And here we're already on step two. If we're just willing to believe, we'll get results right away. We're going to start to see something happen. What happened to me is I lost the desire to drink. Lost the desire to drink. So not having the desire to drink, it made it easier for me to become willing to the program, to become willing to come here. Now, I didn't know what God of my understanding was. I was, you know, I was just praying because you told me to pray, and I knew that there was something out there that was good. I was praying to that something that was good. I didn't have a name for it. I didn't have a religion attached to it. That's what I did. I went to churches with my first sponsor. I visited a lot of churches, went to Buddhist temples, went, you know, all kinds of, tried a lot of things on. You know, what I started to see was that my higher power was the love that I experienced in my life and the healing that was happening to me as I stood and looked back and hadn't picked up a drink for a month, 2 months, 3 months. It was real. It was working. It was happening in my life. It was a higher power of my experience. And since then, so many other things have helped me to create a higher power, which I do understand now and depend on for life. So they asked, do I now believe, or am I, if you have to ask yourself, or anybody that, you know, you're sponsoring, you know, have them ask themselves, do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? That's where we start, in the solution. And it's been repeatedly proven that once we are willing to believe, that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So we're starting to build a foundation for life in sobriety, for a healthy life. This is the cornerstone. I looked up cornerstone before I came, and it's something that is essential, indispensable, or basic, the starting place in construction, the cornerstone. That's what step two is. Next week, we're going to talk about using this little framework, this infant belief that we're just now getting, to begin to build a relationship with a power greater than ourselves, which will start to work in our daily lives. And that's what we will talk about next week in step three. And that's it for step two.
Thank you, Jennifer. So now we'd like to open this up for some question and answer discussion. If you have a question for Jennifer, please feel free to raise your hand. Here in the room, we'll bring you the microphone. Or if you're on Zoom, just go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up whenever you have the chance. So we'd like to get us started.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Caitlin.
I once heard somebody say in the rooms, you know, the first step is I can't, the second would be he can, and the third would be he will if I let him, right? So for step two, which is actually what I'm on right now with my sponsor, I worked it in the past many years ago, but I too am agnostic pretty much, but I do believe in like the universe. So for me, it's just hard to, it's hard to like cling on to something, like, or to pray to something that I don't really know what it is. You know, but I know that there's power, there's this power out there for sure that makes miracles happen and, you know, blesses people, and, you know, there's things that I don't understand either, but I guess my question is, so in step two, it's just, is it just becoming willing to believe in something?
Yes, and what you said about, you know, that there's something out there that brings blessings to people and makes miracles happen. Pray to that.
Yeah. Right.
Doesn't have to have a name.
Right. Right. Thank you.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bridget.
Thank you so much for your share this evening. You know, when you're talking about came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, I wondered if you had any sense at the time that, oh, maybe I don't need to try to control everything. Maybe maybe I should maybe step back and maybe look in the mirror and maybe just try to bring it down a few notches. I wondered if that was any kind of a realization, because it was for me. So that's why I'm asking you.
Wow. Okay. Let me think a second, because I have to go back a little bit in time.
Okay.
Where I decided to drop the I'm running the world mm-hmm. identity. Terry, don't say anything. She's there. She knows. I really don't think that happened to me yet. Sporadically, it would happen. Like, in getting here, I had a kind of a surrender when I was so bad. Like, my bottom was a hit your knees, beg to die, or whatever. This power of good that I talked about. That's all I knew about a higher anything. Drop to my knees and ask, if you would have me die, that's okay. I cannot live like this anymore. Whatever you think should happen. That certainly was a surrender of control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But of course, when I got in AA, I wanted to run the world a little bit. You can have my alcohol problem. Looks like we've got that under control, but I'm still going to, handle my own relationships, thank you, because I'm such an expert and I'm so good at it. And, and that didn't work either. I would say that I would say it was step three for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were you, did you have any inkling at this early stage that perhaps the book was antiquated and you wanted to rewrite it?
No, never.
Okay. Because I did not, but one of my family members did and voiced that quite a bit. They're over it now. They're way over it. But it was a poorly written piece of literature.
So. Oh, is that right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This is now.
I think it's absolutely inspired. I know it's God-given. It is a design for my life that has worked through some very rough going. And I am a big book thumper. I really believe, we should all know the book as well as we are able. When I was really young in sobriety, I used to go to a big book meeting on Friday nights at 9 o'clock at St. Stephen's Church on West 21st Street. And I used to sit by Fred Sweeney, and some of you may have known him. He was 38 years sober, and he never missed a big book meeting on Friday nights. And I sat next to him and I said to myself, there must be a reason why after 38 years he's still reading this book. So I just kept reading the book, and also found a great big book meeting, Young in Sobriety, called the Basic Text Training Group. And we worked very hard on studying the book and the steps. Because, like I said last week, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob said the reason for meetings, AA meetings, is to discuss the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. The fellowship and sponsorship and our private, dealing with our private issues, we have places and times and people for that. But for meetings, this is what we should be talking about. Thanks. Thanks, Bridget.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Helen.
Fantastic. I really, really liked your explanation. And you said you didn't really struggle with the second step. And I didn't struggle with the second step either. Because I said to myself, I believe in God. And if I needed to be restored to sanity, my God could definitely do. Did you have any denial as far as insanity? As it applied.
No, and neither did anybody around me. Believe me, they pretty much no. Mm-mm. They were like, oh yeah, that would be her. It did take me. I did have to be told by my sponsor the type of insanity they're talking about in this step, because I really thought, the first time that I read it, that okay, this is cool, I'm going to be like super healthy, and why are the rest of the steps there? I did need to understand that this is talking about the insanity that precedes the first drink. You know, what happens to my mind as an alcoholic when I say, you know, after the third DUI, I can still have a couple drinks, I don't have far to drive. You know, I didn't have three DUIs, but if I had, I would have said that, you know. Thanks, Ellen. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Bren, an alcoholic.
Hey,
Jennifer,
Bren.
Thanks for going over step two. So that step, when I first came in, really ticked me off because I looked at it like, well, how do you restore something you never had?
Yeah.
And I did not understand. I hate that word insanity, the connotations of what I think of in that case. So do you believe, or do you, well, how can I put this? I don't know if I became insane because I started drinking, or I'm wired different, or alcoholics are wired different, and that's just what happens, you know, keep doing that same thing over and over again. I wish they had a different word besides insanity. But, you know, I think I've always been messed up, even though I do. Even though I wouldn't have admitted that for years and years because I thought being messed up was normal.
Yeah. Well, the doctor's opinion tells us we're wired different from other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are. And no, I don't really think the sanity they're talking about here is the mental obsession. I don't think I always had that, mm-hmm. but I think I was always had the ism. I have never met an alcoholic yet, and if you're the one who is the exception to this, please raise your hand and I'll mark that down, because I've not met one yet that even before they picked up a drink did not feel a deep-seated sense of unworthiness. That did not feel a little out of place mm-hmm. in the world, not comfortable in their skin. I believe, this is just my belief in my experience, that spiritual malady is the root of my alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And the drink, when I picked it up, seemed like the solution to that spiritual malady, that mm-hmm. emptiness. And then, you know, like it says in Bill's story, eventually turned like a boomerang on me and cut me to ribbons. That's what it says. Because it was a pretender. You know, alcohol is a liar. It says this is a solution to your pain and your uncertainty and your inferiority feelings. But it's not.
And so, I don't know how this works, but I identify with people in AA more than anybody. But do you believe, like I believe, that there's a lot of people out that are insane and they don't even drink?
Oh, sure.
Because I don't know a lot of them.
I don't know if it's the same kind of insanity as we're talking about here. Because we're talking about that, you know, insanity that precedes a drink. They may not have that issue. But, there's a lot of crazy people. Yeah.
Who else has a question for Jennifer?
Hi, Jennifer. Colleen, alcoholic. When did you feel that you actually reached the second step? When did you know that you came to believe? Like, what happened?
It was pretty early. Like I talked about last week, my first sponsor really was awake to how sick I was and how dangerous it would be for me to pick up a drink. Also, she was aware that we don't sit on the first step. You know, like I said last week, I did it. I did all that stuff before I got to AA. I just had to admit it, you know, and understand, you know, that's why I was here. Then immediately move into the solution. Step two is the beginning of the solution. If I stay in the problem, I will drink. Because that's what it tells me is going to happen. You know, it couldn't be more clear. I need to, you know, I need to understand step one, work with a sponsor. If I don't, find in myself if I truly believe I have a problem with alcohol, and If my life is unmanageable, if I can admit that to myself, I need to move immediately to step two, because otherwise, there I am with a problem, no solution. Mm-hmm. I will drink. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Who else would like to ask a question? Oh, sorry about that.
I was whistling at you too. Hi, Jennifer. It's great being here listening to step one and two. I'm back at basics right now, so it's right where I need to be.
Oh, good.
I think in the big book, I think there's a section in there about that people have trouble. They believe there's something greater than themselves, but they can't really put, you know, develop anything what God would be like. And I think it suggests in the big book that go on a piece of paper and write down what your higher power, you would like him to be, or what you would imagine him to be, and use that,
yep.
You know? And I think that would work. I mean, I truly believe in God because he's worked through me, and he is again.
And probably
always
has all those qualities that you would write down, yes?
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I think some people have a trouble with it because it's not tangible, you can't mm-hmm. see it, but you actually see his works through mm-hmm. others, you know? Like that gentleman you said, text, I have 13 years, you know.
Yeah.
Or someone mentioned about watching their father. Oh, yeah,
my
you
father.
Did.
Yeah.
Your father, you know, when he got into AA, the change. And that's the miracle of something that is greater than ourselves, I believe. But anyway, did you think that's a good idea, you know?
I do.
For anybody, you can start somewhere. I was in a rehab care unit years ago. And Big Joe Smith was come up there. Mary, you remember them? They were come up there. But anyway, one of the counselors told this guy, he was a Mexican. He drank tequila. He owned a bar in Meadville. And he could not. I refused. There is nothing.
Oh, okay.
They told him to use that chair temporarily. Do you know he really found God? And, you know, but when it was all said and done afterwards and had, I don't know how much time in sobriety, but he used the chair in the beginning, you know? Whatever works, right?
You know, really, whatever works. I think that using AA, the AA group, is really helpful for some people, you know, who, because it is tangible, and you can really, you can see wellness, and you can see happiness and health and love, you know, which God, for me, is love. You know, where love is, that's where God is. In these rooms, there's love. That's how, you know, a lot of people find God, by first using the group and then realizing the group is a microcosm, you know, of something much larger.
And by the way, I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rick. Thank you.
I got to say that in the beginning. That's what I did back in 1984. I used the group as mm-hmm. a church, as keeping my sobriety, but I didn't get a sponsor, so I didn't work the steps. I feared four. So I half measures to no avail. You go
there
back
it is.
Out. Yeah. And
yeah.
That's exactly what happened back then.
I'm really glad you're here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said something and I forgot what it was I was going to share on, touch on. Oh well. The train left the station.
It'll be back. It's okay.
How about anybody on Zoom? Does anybody on Zoom have a question?
Thanks, Jennifer. It was so nice to hear you talk about step two. I'm Leslie, alcoholic.
Hi, Leslie.
And what I was wondering is this. You know, for me, sometimes, well, a lot of times, I had to do things like move my feet and the brain follows. And I was wondering in the passage to really taking on a mindset of step two mm-hmm. and that gut level conviction, was there certain actions that you were taking, whether it was reading or praying or I don't know, whatever, what did your sponsor tell you in terms of action, you know, to kind of move the butt and get the brain to follow?
Those, yeah. Praying, definitely. Meetings. And really, my first sponsor was a very evolved spiritual woman, and I would just listen to her. Learning to listen. Listening had a lot to do with it for me. I wasn't a great listener, not still great today, but she was a great talker, and so so I listened to her, and she taught me the book also. I told you I won my big book like in the first couple weeks at the Lawrence Group, and then I found that meeting, that basic text training group, you know, where we studied the base. This is the basic text, you know, this is our textbook, where we studied this book, and we had that meeting every night. And I was young in sobriety. I was, I think, in my first year. Yeah, I was in my first year, right, Terry? Yeah. And so early on, you know, I was into the book. So yeah, I went to like 2-3 meetings a day for a couple of years, Leslie, because I was a real sick girl. I didn't feel comfortable in the world. I felt comfortable with you.
Yeah, thank you. It's kind of been my experience. If my brain isn't cooperating, to just keep doing the next right thing and hope for the best. So thank you for sharing that, kind of the nuts and bolts things that you did. So,
well, my husband, who's a member, always says it's all about showing up. You know, if you're not here, you know, the thing you're not hearing might be the thing, you know, that, or for me, the thing I'm not hearing is the thing I may need to hear today. So I try to show up, you know. Sure.
Who else has a question?
Give me your old chance.
There we go.
All right, well, you guys are too shy. Anyway, thank you again, Jennifer, for doing this. I know this is a big deal. When you're sponsoring somebody and somebody comes out of a rehab, you know, we used to have to do a lot of 12-step calls and you'd drag people to meetings and they didn't really have a choice, or they were just still in a fog, and by the time they woke up it was 30 days of sobriety. And, and they learned some of the vocabulary and stuff like that. But, you know, people who are coming out of a rehab now, you know, I understand that you've been around for a long time and so has AA, but, you know, I've been to this rehab and I've got to come with this great education from this rehab, and I've done most of these steps there, and I understand this, but I was told I had to get a sponsor. You look pretty nice, and you know, you got to come. I have a nice car. I think you have what I want. So, what do you do with me now?
Yeah. My friend Terry did all the steps in detox, I think, didn't you, Terry? Yeah, she was really good at it. I tell people, and if this offends anybody, I'm really sorry, but rehab is not recovery. AA is recovery. I remember being young and sobriety. Bill McShane brought my dad. He was an old timer. I don't know if anybody ever knew him or ever heard of him. I think he passed away with 50 years of sobriety. He brought my dad in. I heard him lead one time, and he said, "Well," and this was some time ago, I think it's pricier now, "you can spend $40,000, and when you leave, they will tell you to go to AA, get a big book, and get a sponsor. Or you can come to AA, get a big book, and get a sponsor." I think it costs more now. But I heard him, and I did not go to a rehab, so it's kind of not fair of me to make any kind of judgment. I mean, I think there is value for people who really are just need a place to wake up a little. But it is not recovery. This is recovery, and a lot, I find, has to be unlearned when some new people get here from certain rehabs. They have a language that is not our language, this is our language. This is our textbook. You know, this is where I start with someone new that I'm sponsoring. We begin at the beginning because, you know, they just were in a place where they were safe and kept alive, and now they're going to actually do the deal. That's what I tell them. Anyway. Harsh, but true.
So you start them with your first step, the way you were taught, and then say, how do you approach them with them saying, well, I already know, and you just say,
I tell them, read the doctor's opinion and call me after you've highlighted everything you can relate to, and we'll talk about it. And then when they call, I say, read it again.
No, that's great. That's terrific. Do you have a certain timetable? In other words, you know, you say, all right, so I read the doctor's opinion. Okay, I did. Yeah, it's kind of right. You know?
No, people are different, you know. Like, I have this one gal, I'm not actually sponsoring her. She asked me to sponsor, but... Oh, there you are. Oh, you have a question?
No, I moved.
Oh, okay. Thank you for letting me know. I was looking for you, and it was Jack. She asked me to sponsor, but she doesn't. She just doesn't seem to be able to pick up the phone or something. So interestingly, for the last week, she's been texting me good morning every day at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's what she can do so far. Now I wouldn't call myself a sponsor. That's not sponsoring. I'm not doing anything, you know, and she's not either, really. So that's not really sponsoring, but I find it an interesting thing to see where this goes. Today I asked her how she was after I said good morning back. Now, perhaps this will end up with a phone call or meeting at a meeting or something. She is going to meetings, but people are different, and they're ready for things at different paces. But we don't sit on step one ever, and we read the book with a certain, we get through the steps, you know. Steps, nobody should not be through the steps in the first 6 months to a year for any reason. I mean, I can't imagine I would have survived, but that's me. So what do I know? Yeah, just know me.
So yes, I have a question.
Oh, we have a question here.
During your deprogramming of new people, and they tell you that they have all of these psychological problems, you know, they have anxiety, and, you know, they have depression, and you can't sleep, and, you know, their psychiatrist said that they should do these things and take all these meds. How do you handle that?
That's a really good question. Like, I knew you would come up with something that would just, be a stumper.
Yeah, you should tell them where it was.
Okay, here. You can't hear Terry?
Just paraphrase the question.
Okay, what she asked me is, if I get a new person who just came out of rehab and they're on like 10 psych meds and, you know, they're suffering from anxiety and depression, and they can't sleep, and nothing's going right in their life, and what do I do? Well, I'm not a doctor, so I cannot tell somebody to, and I would never tell somebody to stop a medication or anything about that. That's not my job. But I would suggest that that they re-examine, you know, their need, you know, for additional, you know, medications. For instance, most people, and I've noticed this with young women I'm working with, as they move through the steps, you know, I don't stop them from moving because that's their situation. As they move through the steps, sometimes these fall away, and often they do. Sometimes there is a real need. I had a woman I sponsored for 15 years. She decided to drop her meds at a certain point, and it was dangerous. It was real unhealthy. She got real sick real fast. You know, she suffered from clinical depression, which is an entirely different thing than alcoholism. So I don't play doctor, but I do say, okay, you know, I do tell them what Abby told me: when you're tired enough, you'll sleep. That's what she told me. That's what happened. and I still have them move through the steps, show up at meetings, learn to be responsible. And I've noticed that they're not taking I don't need the sleeping pills anymore, and I'm going back to my doctor and I'm taking less of this. You know, it can happen that way as we get healthier. What about you, Tara? Does that work for you? Yeah, okay, thanks.
Jennifer, I have one more question.
Okay, great.
In your sponsoring so many women, have you found the ones who were either agnostic and or atheist turned around working the steps and did come to believe in a power greater than themselves?
Yes.
Okay.
I have also found that the ones who did not want to work the steps did not. Okay. They didn't turn around and they didn't recover. Yeah.
Thank you. Any last questions? If not, thank you, Jennifer.